So I'm guessing not many of us have been doing a lot of reading in the book of Numbers recently. I mean, to begin with, there's that title. It's not exactly inviting. Sounds more like something you'd find on a spreadsheet than, you know, something you'd turn to for spiritual edification. Although I recognize there may be some among us who do find spiritual edification in spreadsheets, but that's clearly the minority. The name does describe pretty much the first four chapters of the book. It's this very extensive listing of the census that it happens in among the Israelites as they're wandering through the wilderness after they've been liberated from slavery. But most of the rest of the book really is these accounts of what happens with them as they near the end of that 40-year time of Exodus. And it's really better described by the title that the book has in Hebrew, which is In the Desert. And in the desert, one of the common themes that keeps coming up is that the Israelites are complaining a lot. First, there's no water, and so God tells Moses first of all, there is water, but it's not good to drink. So the Lord tells Moses how to make it sweet. And then they complain that there's no food, so God sends manna, and they have food to eat. And then there's no water in the desert, and God tells Moses to strike a rock, and water comes gushing out. And then the manna isn't enough. They need to have meat, and so God sends quail into the camp, and they have meat. And then again, there's no water, and so again, Moses strikes the rock, and there's water again. And every time, they complain, and God responds. And then we come to our text for this morning, and once again, they're complaining. And we might have some sympathy for them. They're out there in the desert, but we already know that at least five times they've been complaining, and God has always responded. And in fact, their complaint this time doesn't even quite, it's not consistent. Okay, they start out by saying there's no food and there's no water, and then immediately after that they say, and we detest this miserable food. So which is it? Do they really not have any food, or do they just not like the food that God is giving them? Well, after repeatedly acceding to the people's demands, God finally seems to lose patience this time. And God does not give more food or more water. Instead, God gives them snakes, poisonous snakes. A lot of the people are bitten, and many of those who are bitten die. And now, to their credit, the Israelites figured this out pretty quickly. They understand that their complaining has crossed over a line. And they confess their sin to Moses. They appeal to him to intervene with God on their behalf. And Moses has a talk with God. And Lord comes up with a way to get out of their predicament. Now, I think it's really interesting here that God does not just get rid of the snakes, which would be the easy thing to do, right? But instead, God tells Moses to make an image of a snake and to put it up on a pole. And then every time that somebody is bitten by the snakes that are still there, they just look at the pole with the snake on a stick, and they're going to be healed. Okay, it's a pretty strange story, right? But there's a bit of genius, I think, here, the solution that God comes up with, making that snake a symbol that they have to look at in order to receive healing. In order to be made well, they have to confront that which has made them ill in the first place. They have to recognize the connection between the complaining they've been doing and the punishment they've been giving, and then their healing is dependent on acknowledging the symbol of their sinfulness. God doesn't get rid of the snakes. God doesn't keep the snakes from biting people. But God gives the people a way to overcome the difficulties that they are facing. It is an act of mercy. But God's mercy can only be received in this case when people are ready to face their own shortcomings, when they're willing to stare down that which has by which they brought suffering upon themselves. And so the bronze snake becomes a powerful symbol of healing, a symbol of wholeness, a symbol of salvation from death and destruction. So healing and wholeness are brought about by the people's recognition of their own sinfulness and by the overwhelming mercy and grace of God. Now, it's interesting that this strange story of a snake on a stick, it comes up at least two more times in the biblical narrative. The first time is in 2 Kings. And King Hezekiah is initiating this reformation, a renewal of Jewish religious practices. And it seems here by this time, several centuries later, that serpent that Moses had made, it's been kept in the temple, and over time it has become an object of worship in and of itself. Now, it's not too hard to understand how that could have happened. I mean, by this time, the Israelites have been interacting with various cultures around them, and a lot of those cultures have images of snakes that are connected to their own deities. So, for example, the Mesopotamian god of the underworld, Ninggazida, is also represented by snakes wrapped around a pole. There are deities that directly link snakes with healing as well. There's the Canaanite goddess Umpukal. There's the Greek god Asclepius. And in fact, the snake on a stick that is the logo for the American Medical Association is actually comes from the Greek god Asclepius and the staff of Asclepius. And so by the time of Hezekiah, the descendants of those who have faced the snakes in the desert, they've kind of forgotten about what the snake originally represented. They don't see it anymore as a symbol of their own sin. They don't see it as a sign of God's mercy. For them, this snake on a stick has become something magical. It's a good luck charm. It's a talisman to ward off illness. And so what does Hezekiah do? He destroys that ancient bronze snake. Apparently, he thinks that the association that it has taken on with other religions, other deities, and magical ideas, they become so much ingrained and part of the Israelite understanding that original meaning of the snake cannot be restored. The people simply cannot distinguish anymore between those idols that promise magical healing and this symbol that is meant to be a reminder of their sin and of God's mercy. And so the bronze image has to be destroyed in order to restore a proper worship of God. There's another place then, and later on in the Bible, where once again we have a reference to this story. And this one actually comes from Jesus himself. It's in John chapter 3. Jesus is meeting with Nicodemus. And in that conversation, Jesus says, "Just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up." Now, Nicodemus, of course, would have known about the story, about the snake on a stick that Jesus is referring to, but I'm guessing he's probably about as confused with Jesus' reference in this conversation as he has been already by Jesus telling him that he has to be born again. We have the benefit of hindsight. We can figure out a little bit more what Jesus is talking about. We know that when he's talking about the Son of Man, he's talking about himself, and we can look back and see various ways in which Jesus indeed was lifted up. When Jesus' time on earth comes to an end, he's lifted up to heaven before the eyes of his disciples. On Easter morning, he's lifted up out of the tomb. But of course, before any of that happens, first of all, he is lifted up onto the cross where he suffers and he dies. And in many ways, that cross is very much like the snake on a stick. Because like that snake, the cross is an image of suffering and of horror. Like being bitten by a poisonous snake, being nailed to a cross leads to an agonizing death. But like the snake also, the cross is ultimately transformed by God into an instrument of healing. And as the Israelites are made whole by looking upon the image of the snake that has bitten them, so we are made whole as we look upon the cross of Christ. They stared at the snake and recognized their own sin. So also we are invited to stare at the cross to recognize our sin. They gazed at the snake as a means of accepting God's mercy. We are invited to gaze on the cross to accept God's mercy as well. For through the cross, God invites us to recognize our own sinfulness, to accept that Jesus was lifted up not because of his own sin, not just because other people sin, but because of our sins, because of my sin. And when we do that, then we begin to find healing. And in that conversation with Nicodemus, Jesus goes on to say one of the most often quoted verses in the entire Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but will have eternal life. Life that never ends, yes, but also life that has meaning, that has purpose right now. Life that revels in the presence of God today rather than relying on some magic wand to make everything better. Life that experiences healing in the midst of brokenness and not some cosmic escape from suffering. Life that brings that healing and hope to others around us and not just that we claim for ourselves. But a few verses on, Jesus then also goes on to note that although the light has come into the world, people love darkness rather than light. And just as the Israelites misunderstood that ancient bronze serpent, so we 21st century American Christians so often misunderstand the meaning of the cross. And rather than perceiving the cross in the light of God's grace and God's mercy, our view is clouded by the shadowy darkness of our own sin, our own brokenness. Like the ancient snake on a stick, the cross for many of us has become something magical, a good luck charm. Perhaps even an idol. For just as those ancient Israelites looked at the snake on a stick and they saw gods like Ningazida, Numpachal, and Asclepius, we also look upon the cross, we see our own cultural images. We see these crosses of shiny crosses of silver and gold. They make nice decorations. They're not that rough-hewn and blood-stained wood upon which the Romans executed their enemies. In fact, the cross for many of us looks a lot like a plus sign. And so it isn't a symbol of sin and sacrifice. It is a symbol of adding more and more to what we have, more things, more money, more power, more prestige, very rarely more love. Or maybe the cross looks to us like a hammer or an axe, a tool that can be used to tear down, to demolish. Or maybe it looks like a gavel in a courtroom, something that confirms a judgment. We like to use the cross to condemn what we see as sins in other people, to prove our own righteousness by pointing out when other people are wrong, because it's always a lot easier to focus on the sexual misconduct of other people than to admit our own sins of greed. It's easier to see the wickedness of those who abuse alcohol or drugs than to see the sins of self-righteousness in our own lives. It is easier to look down on the transgressions of those who lie or cheat or steal than to look inward at the ways in which we contribute to the culture of violence and hate all around us. God invites us to look upon the cross and to see something else. God invites us to walk in the light of God's mercy. And in that light, we can recognize the cross as profoundly transformative. Just like the snake on a stick brought healing to the Israelites, we are offered wholeness through Jesus, who is lifted up upon the cross. And just as that symbol of evil was transformed into an instrument of healing in the desert, so the cross becomes a symbol of wholeness for us, sin and grace in one symbol, problem and solution in one moment, a work of God in response to the sins of God's people. The cure for snakes is a snake on a stick, and the cure for death is the death and resurrection of Jesus. In God's infinite wisdom, the way to wholeness is found by treading the path of suffering and brokenness. And healing is found then when we come to the cross. It is found when we expose our own sinfulness to the light of God's love and God's mercy. And healing is found then when we open ourselves to God's overwhelming grace.